Big shout going out to Ricky D. What's up, Ricky?
O'clock in Montreal. Coming up is Mosaic, and you're listening to the CKT Radio at 90.3 FM. I'm Sarah Hassanin. Here's the news from Alice Wu.
My name is Alice Wu, and here are some of the recent headlines. On Sunday afternoon, hundreds of people met at Place Émile de Gamelin in Ville-Marie for the March for Status for All. This event was organized by the community group Solidarity Across Borders. They want the federal government to grant permanent residency status to all people living on Canadian soil, so these people can access health care and other social services. And Grenadian Montrealers are demanding the city for answers after a suspected case of racial profiling. Last month, 15 police officers appeared at a barbecue outside Green's restaurant in Lachine. The officers included members of the Eclipse Squad, who specialize in organized crime. This was in response to a noise complaint at 8:30 p.m. on Jean-Baptiste Day, Quebec's national holiday. And last week, the Quebec government agreed to give the Long Point First Nation in Winneway its own regional police force. The new unit will be made of Indigenous patrol officers and replace the provincial force. This comes after more than 15 years of negotiations and concerns about slow response times from provincial officers. And as of Thursday, doctors in Quebec can prescribe the abortion pill as long as they feel qualified to do so. In the past, doctors were required to complete an in-person training program to perform medical and surgical abortions. This policy change comes after at least 300 Quebec doctors signed an open letter demanding the removal of restrictions surrounding abortion pill access. And the Montreal Children's Hospital's emergency room is overwhelmed. On Sunday, the hospital sent a news release asking parents of children seeking non-urgent care to avoid going to the ER. My name is Alice Wu, and here are some of the recent headlines. On Saturday, the World Health Organization declared the current monkeypox outbreak to be a global health emergency. This is the organization's highest alert level, aimed at encouraging countries to invest more in treatments and vaccines. There are around 700 cases in Canada, with nearly half in Quebec. And the Quebec government has approved the Moderna vaccine, called Spikevax, for children between 6 months and 5 years old. Parents can get appointments through the province's Clique Santé online health portal. Quebec recommends two doses and waiting at least 8 weeks between doses. Some immunocompromised children may get a third dose. And this week, Pope Francis is visiting Canada. He's in Quebec City from July 27th to July 29th. The Roman Catholic Church says the goal of the visit is to promote healing among the First Nations, Métis, and Inuit communities, whose children endured abuse in residential schools run by the church. And Montréal and Place des Arts just became Montreal's 20th and 21st universally accessible metro stations. This means that they now have elevators and wheelchair-accessible entrances. And now for some news you can use. Jeunesse Lambda is organizing a picnic for trans and non-binary youth between the ages of 14 and 30. The event is free and takes place this Saturday, July 23rd at 1:30 p.m. in Parc La Fontaine. Food will be provided, but you can also bring your own. To learn more, visit the Jeunesse Lambda Facebook page. And last Friday marked the return of the NDG Borough's weekly neighborhood farmers market. Every Friday from 1 to 6 p.m., you can buy fresh local produce at the corner of Monkland and Old Orchard, near the Monkland Tavern. And if you live in another borough, look up your local farmers market. There are at least 14 in Montreal this summer. Search for MTL Blog Farmers Markets. And the Grand Poutine Fest kicked off in Montreal last week. It's running in the Old Port from now until July 31st and features plenty of creative flavor combinations. This year, all poutines are sold in reusable dishes, and part of each sale goes to the pediatrics nonprofit Opération Enfant Soleil. For more information, search for Le Grand Poutine Fest on Facebook. And now for some news you can use. The nonprofit The Yellow Door is looking for volunteers for their Generations program. It fights isolation among older populations and creates intergenerational relationships. Each volunteer is paired with a senior with common interests and is expected to share 1 to 2 hours of their week. For more information, visit yellowdoor.org and click on the Programs tab. And the Open Door Shelter is seeking donations of spare smartphones, as well as several clothing items. To see what items are needed, visit the shelter's new Instagram page, which is Open Door Porte Ouverte. You can also follow the page. And the Fantasia International Film Festival is ongoing in Montreal. It's the largest genre film festival in North America and focuses on films produced outside of Hollywood, including in other continents. The festival takes place in various buildings on the Concordia University campus until August 3rd. For more information, visit fantasiafestival.com. And the Museum of Jewish Montreal is showcasing a classic Jewish food in an event called A Tale of Two Bagels. It discusses how New York and Montreal bagels relate to Jewish cultural identity, and it includes food samples. The event is August 4th at 6 p.m. at the museum's location on Saint-Laurent. Tickets are $10. To reserve yours, visit museemontrealjuif.ca.
Je m'appelle Alice Wu et voici quelques des gros titres récents. Le dimanche après-midi, des centaines de personnes se sont rassemblées à Place Émile de Gamelin dans Ville-Marie pour la marche pour une statue pour tout. L'organisateur était Solidarité sans frontières, un groupe demandant que le gouvernement fédéral accorde une statue de résidence permanente à toute personne vivant en sol canadien. Ainsi, ces personnes pourraient accéder aux soins de santé et d'autres services sociaux. Et la communauté canadienne de Montréal exige des réponses de la ville après un cas suspect de profilage racial. Le mois dernier, 15 policiers sont apparus à un barbecue devant Green's Restaurant à la Chine. Quelques des agents font partie de la section Eclipse, qui se spécialise en crimes organisés. Ils répondaient à une plainte de bruit à 20h30 le jour de la fête nationale. Et la semaine dernière, le gouvernement de Québec a décidé d'accorder à la Première Nation de Long Point à Winneway sa propre force de police. L'unité sera composée d'agents autochtones et prendra la place de la force provinciale. Cette décision survient après plus de 15 ans de négociations et de préoccupations concernant des longs délais de réponse de la part des agents provinciaux. Et dès jeudi dernier, les médecins québécois peuvent prescrire la pilule abortive pourvu qu'ils se sentent qualifiés. Dans le passé, les médecins devaient suivre un programme de formation en personne pour faire des avortements médicaux ou chirurgicaux. Ce changement de politique est en réponse à une lettre ouverte signée par au moins 300 médecins dans la province. Il exigeait l'enlèvement des restrictions concernant l'accès à la pilule abortive. Et la salle des urgences de l'hôpital de Montréal pour enfants est débordée. Le dimanche, l'hôpital a envoyé un communiqué de presse demandant aux parents des enfants qui ne sont pas dans un état urgent d'éviter de visiter les urgences. Je m'appelle Alice Wu et voici quelques des gros titres récents. Le samedi, l'Organisation mondiale de la santé a déclaré l'épidémie de la variole simienne une urgence de santé publique de portée internationale. Celle-ci est le plus haut niveau d'alerte possible et censé encourager les nations à investir plus en traitements et vaccins. Il y a environ 700 cas de variole simienne au Canada, et presque un demi sont au Québec. Et le gouvernement du Québec a autorisé le vaccin de Moderna, appelé Spikevax, pour les enfants de 6 mois à 5 ans. Les parents peuvent maintenant programmer un rendez-vous en utilisant le portail de santé numérique Clic Santé. Le gouvernement recommande que les enfants reçoivent 2 doses et attendent au moins 8 semaines entre eux. Certains enfants immunodéprimés peuvent recevoir une 3e dose. Et cette semaine, le pape François visite le Canada et il visite la ville de Québec en particulier du 27 au 29 juillet. Selon l'Église catholique, le but de la visite est de promouvoir la guérison parmi les communautés Premières Nations, Métis et Inuits, dont les enfants ont été des objets d'abus dans les pensionnats gérés par l'Église. Et Montréal et Place des Arts sont devenues la 20e et 21e gare de métro accessibles dans la ville. Cela signifie qu'elles ont maintenant des entrées qui permettent l'accès chaises roulantes ainsi que des ascenseurs.
Maintenant, voici des nouvelles directement pertinentes à votre vie. Jeunesse Lambda organise un pique-nique pour les jeunes trans et non-binaires de 14 à 30 ans. Cet événement gratuit aura lieu ce samedi 23 juillet à 13h30 au Parc La Fontaine. La nourriture sera offerte, mais vous pouvez aussi apporter votre propre repas. Pour en savoir plus, visitez la page Facebook Jeunesse Lambda. Et vendredi dernier a marqué le retour du marché fermier du quartier Notre-Dame-de-Grâce. Chaque vendredi de 13 à 18 heures, vous pouvez acheter des produits frais et locaux à l'angle des avenues Monkland et Old Orchard, près du taverne Monkland.
Si vous n'êtes pas un résident de NDG, il y a au moins 14 autres marchés de fermiers de quartier à Montréal cet été. Recherchez MTL Blog Farmers Markets pour plus d'informations. Et le Grand Poutine Fest a démarré à Montréal la semaine dernière. Il se déroule au Vieux-Port jusqu'au 31 juillet et offre plusieurs combinaisons de saveurs créatives. Cette année, toutes les poutines sont servies dans des plats réutilisables et une partie des bénéfices sera donnée à l'opération Enfant Soleil, une organisation sans but lucratif. Pour en savoir plus, recherchez le Grand Poutine Fest sur Facebook. Maintenant, voici quelques nouvelles directement pertinentes à votre vie. L'organisme sans but lucratif, La Porte Jaune, cherche des bénévoles pour son programme Génération. Il vise à réduire l'isolation parmi les personnes âgées et d'établir des relations intergénérationnelles. Chaque bénévole est jumelé avec une aînée avec des intérêts communs et est tenu de donner entre 1 et 2 heures de son temps par semaine. Pour en apprendre plus, visitez fr.yellowdoor.org et cliquez sur l'onglet appelé Programme. Et La Porte Ouverte, un centre pour les personnes en situation d'itinérance, cherche des dons de smartphones et de plusieurs pièces de vêtements. Pour plus d'informations, incluant les articles désirés, visitez la nouvelle page d'Instagram du centre, Open Door Porte Ouverte. Vous pouvez aussi suivre le profil. Et le Musée du Montréal Juif va mettre en valeur un aliment typiquement juif, le bagel, avec un événement nommé A Tale of Two Bagels. Des historiens y discuteront comment les bagels de Montréal et de New York sont liés à l'identité culturelle juive et on pourra y profiter des échantillons. L'événement aura lieu le 4 août à 18h au bâtiment du musée, situé sur le boulevard Saint-Laurent. Les billets coûtent 10$. Pour en réserver un, visitez le site web museemontrealjuif.ca. Et le Festival international de films Fantasia est en cours à Montréal. C'est le plus grand festival de films de genre en Amérique du Nord et se concentre sur les œuvres produites en dehors de Hollywood, incluant celles provenant d'autres continents. Le festival a lieu dans différents bâtiments sur le campus de l'Université Concordia jusqu'au Toiseau. Pour en savoir plus, visitez fantasiafestival.com.
And that was the news from Alice Wu. You're listening to Mosaic from the CKUT Radio at 90.3 FM, Montreal. I'm Sarah Hassanin. Sri Lanka is hit by a huge economic crisis. The crisis is said to have begun due to multiple compounding factors like tax cuts, money creation, a nationwide policy to shift to biological farming, the 2019 Sri Lanka Easter bombings, let alone the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Pranjal Malik has Ms. Julia Marshall, spokesperson for the UN World Food Program in Canada.
Sri Lanka is going through an economic crisis where food inflation has reached a record high of 80% in June, impacting more than 6 million people, which is nearly 30% of the population. Julia, can you please elaborate more on the intensity of the situation?
Well, it's very worrying right now. We really need, as a community, as the international community, to act and to act quickly. As you said, that's 30% of the population of struggling to feed themselves. And what that really means is that women-headed households struggle the most. Women often eat last and least, so they go hungry. The safety nets, the government safety nets, school feeding, they reach about 1 in 4 children across the country, and they've been disrupted or put on hold. The nutritional programs for women and children, for young children and breastfeeding mothers and pregnant mothers, have been put on hold. So this is where we need to step up with emergency food cash and vouchers, but also make sure that the children and the women get the nutritional nutrition that they need.
Yes, exactly. Just going off of that, 2 in 5 households, those which are headed by women, are not eating enough, and the crisis leading to disruption in national school meal programs. So schools have been shut down, exams have been canceled because of printing paper shortage, and the most vulnerable of population is being impacted. How do you think that's adding on to just the most vulnerable being impacted the most, and just the sheer intensity of the crisis?
Well, yeah, I mean, about 11 years ago, I was in Sri Lanka, and I saw some of these programs myself. I went to see the school feeding programs and the nutritional programs. These are programs that are run by the government, but supported by WFP. So we'll supply fortified food, fortified nutritious products for women and children, working alongside our partners so that the women and children also have received information on how to feed their children and look after themselves, antenatal care, etc. But what we saw was that these programs are vital, especially the ones I saw in the rural poor, but it's also hitting, this crisis is hitting the urban population as well. So a school meal, for instance, if you've got 2 or 3 children going to school, these school meals can be their only nutritious meal of the day. It also gets and encourages families to continue to send their children to school where they can get the food that they need. So it's vital that that WFP picks up this and helps to support the government and continue to feed children. And of course, as well, you have a small window of opportunity to make sure that women and small children get the nutrition that they need. And if they don't, they can have consequences throughout their life. And in Sri Lanka, what I saw even then was not so much a lack of food, but a lack of nutrition. So that's where our programs are going to focus, as well as emergency assistance. And that can come in the shape of fortified rice, wheat, oil, lentils, but also cash. So if there is in fact food in the markets, then WFP can give women, the most vulnerable women, cash vouchers so they can go and purchase this nutritious food themselves. And that helps inject that cash into the local community as well. So that's where we need to focus, and we need to do it quickly.
Yes, definitely. You guys are doing great work. My next question was just that, what is WFP's plan on how is the aid being provided, to get more specific?
Well, we're going to reach, by the end of the year, we're looking to reach around 3.4 million people. So we're going to do that threefold. So first of all, addressing and supporting the school meals program. So around 1 million children will reach there. Again, fortified food is the focus. And about 1 million pregnant and breastfeeding women and their young children. And about 1.4 million with the emergency assistance to the most vulnerable people. Again, that's very often the elderly, women, children, small children, people with disabilities. So we make sure that we're reaching those people by the end of the year. So we put out an appeal, I think it was about a month or so ago, and we need to raise $63 million. That will cover our costs for those programs I just outlined till the end of the year. And at the moment, that's not funded. We're only about a third of the way through. So we've raised around $20.1 million. So that means that we can only reach a third of our target. You know, as you said, there's over 6 million people in need of food assistance right now, or of humanitarian assistance. So we need to, even just if we're targeting just the most vulnerable, we can't do that with the lack of funding at the moment.
Oh, that is really terrifying and heartbreaking. Lastly, I just want to ask, how can we as people help in this situation? I know there's an app, Share the Meal app as well, if you want to talk about that and just any link or anything as such.
Yeah, that's great. So, I mean, one of the things that's really important is that people are talking about it. So this is really helpful that you're talking about it on your show today. And it's good for the students to, you know, to share this information over their social media channels. Make sure people are aware and that something can be done. The numbers are huge, 6 million people going hungry. You know, people think they can't make a difference, but they can. So they can go to WFP.org and they can learn more about the work that we do globally. The World Food Programme reached around 114 million people every year in 123 different countries. We have an app called Share the Meal, which you just touched on. So you can download this WFP app. It's won lots of awards. We've fed millions of people through this app. And it allows you to just choose which program you want to send your funds to. So Sri Lanka is in there. So are other countries in need, like Yemen, like Afghanistan, like Lebanon. So you can choose which country you want to support. And it costs around $1.10 Canadian to have to support one meal. So you can choose to support 50 meals, which is about $55. And you can choose where it goes to. And once you've made your donation on the app, you can then share that information on your social media. So you can tell everybody on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram, that you've just done this and invite your friends and your network to do the same.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much for that. That is, it really brings into perspective how it's such a little difference for anyone who's here, but how much like that one meal would mean for someone who's going through that crisis. So.
That's very true. I mean, I think back to the women and the children that I met when I was in Sri Lanka, and you know, the meals that they received for their children were, you know, made a huge difference to them every single day. It made a difference to a lot of the girls that maybe wouldn't have been in school. So, you know, when you think about, okay, $1.10, what that can buy you here, it can make a real difference to somebody's life. And then you times that by 10 or 15 or 30, whatever you can do, and you're making a difference to, you know, to a whole classroom of girls or to, you know, a room full of women holding their small babies. And right now they really need this help because of this crisis, because of the impact of COVID, because of the remittances that have dropped to the country. That's what this economic crisis is about. And then it's compounded by the growing costs of food and fuel. They just don't have the foreign currency to purchase those goods right now and bring them into the country. So it's having the biggest effect on the most vulnerable as those programs are being cut. So we really need to do something quickly.
Yes, we do. And thank you so much for your time. And thank you so much for bringing more attention to this issue and the work that you're doing. It's really great. And yeah, I'll stop recording.
You're listening to Mosaic from the CKT Radio at 90.3 FM, and I'm Sarah Hassanin. Stay tuned.
في حد ساعات بيكون جنبك وما بتشوفهوش، ما تحسش ابدا بوجوده مع انه قريب، وفي حد يفارق ويسيبنا انما بيعيش جوه قلوبنا، وتغيب الشمس انما اسمه عمره ما بيغيب. في فرق ما بين جسم بيمشي وروح ما بتمشيش، واللي انت اكيد سايبه ما بيننا ده الدنيا سيان. فرحت كتير واوجه دورنا ومعك هنكمل مشوارنا، اصلي ما فيش في الدنيا دي اغلى من روح انسان. وعشان اجيال بعدنا جايين يفضلوا فاكرين يفضلوا عارفين، وعشانك حته منا وعشان تفضل ما بينا يفضل اسمك معانا سنين وسنين. وعشان اجيال بعدنا جايين وعشان مش عايزين نخسر جايين، حلمنا بشوف عينيك وعشان من قلبنا بنحبك هنوصل حني بقلبك للناس اللي ما نسيوش حبك وتعلقوا بيك وعشان أجيال
is at its best when it speaks truth to power. Palestinian-American journalist Shireen Abu Aqla was shot by Israeli snipers on May 11 while covering the atrocities at the Jenin camp in Palestine. But her legacy will still hold up, and the memory of her bravery will never fade, and no one can take that from us. Rima Raji talks to Haytham Qureshi, one of Shireen Abu Aqla's neighbors from Palestine. Qureshi lives in Maryland in the U.S. Today, he takes us on a reminiscent journey as he recollects his memories with Aqla back in their homeland, occupied Palestine. Qureshi is also the coordinator of the Museum for the Palestinian People.
Okay, so before we get started with the questions, can you just briefly introduce yourself, where you're from, where you grew up, where you work, volunteer, etc.?
Okay, sweet. So my name is Haytham Qureshi. I am a Palestinian living here in Maryland in the United States. Originally, my family is from the city of Tul Kerem in Palestine, which is half of it's in the West Bank, half of it's in the occupied territories now under Israel. So it's kind of split between East and West. So I was born in the state of Maryland. And then when I was 6 years old in 2002, I moved to the West Bank. I moved to Palestine during the Second Intifada, so which was a really, really difficult period, especially for us as Palestinians in terms of freedom of movement, rights, access, a lot of horrible, horrible events, and a lot of difficulties growing up. And then I came back to Maryland around 2006. So a year after the Intifada was technically over, which was 2005. And so, you know, growing up, I've always had a fascination with history and geography. And I've always talked about Palestine in one way or another, whether it was related to our realities, politics, but also even cool stuff as well. Things about cities, culture. And I wanted to dive more deep into that. So today I actually work as a museum coordinator on Saturdays at the Museum of the Palestinian People located in Washington, D.C. I started out giving tours there as a docent. And, you know, I found it really fun. It gave me a lot of practice when it came to public speaking, but also speaking on very difficult topics, especially topics that, you know, in Western media don't get covered or don't get covered very well. And being a Palestinian, being able to talk about my story and my experiences, you know, we, not as a news journalist or anchor, but as a storyteller and someone who has lived experience and always likes to learn. So, you know, working there has driven me to learn more about Palestine. Not just our struggle, but also resilience, culture, history, the many diverse communities that have come and gone over the centuries and millennia, and a lot more of that. So, you know, it's been a really good place. The museum is like the Palestinian Cultural Embassy in Washington, D.C., which is convenient because of Washington, D.C.'s status in the world stage. And yeah, that's a lot about me.
How old were you when you first heard about Shireen Abu